Hi, I'm Nyaka Bodji, the founder and CEO of Core Energy. I think I will define myself as a world citizen, a French national with a really proud Senegalese heritage. That's me in a nutshell.
The role of women in the energy sector is not to be underestimated, nor is their contribution to multi-million dollar utilities across Africa. During this Women in Energy podcast series, we're going to be talking with a number of leading women in Africa's power sector, showcasing their influence, the unique elements they bring to their jobs, and provide a little insight into the woman behind the title. As part of our monthly focus on women in energy, we speak this month to Ndiaka Mboji, the CEO of Kauri Energy. Ndiaka is a former executive with the Rolls-Royce Group and is leading a truly diverse team of 10 experienced innovators. We talk about being a global citizen, how she supports women in business, and she shares a bit about the kind of books she reads when she's taking a break.
Ndiaka, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, Claire, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure being with you today.
I was wondering if perhaps you could give us a little bit idea of your background and how you got to where you are. I mean, why energy and perhaps more importantly, why Kauri Energy?
Wow, that's a great question. I think I would say curiosity, definitely curiosity. As far as I can remember, I was one of those annoying kids that would never stop asking why, always wanting to understand how things work and to wanting to solve problems, which led me to study STEM and to go on into 23 amazing years in industry. You know, I studied chemistry and I was early on really fascinated by the transformative force of energy, you know, this electron at this basic level, which is basically everything, life, motion, development. And that's what energy is about. So I spent around 23 years in the power sector in a wider sense, you know, first in the automotive industry, then in aerospace, and then most recently in the mission critical land-based power, you know, with the Rolls-Royce Group and other companies. Mm-hmm. So energy for me is life, and that's what is fascinating. So I spend all my life in energy in general. And why Kauri Energy? Simplistically, I would say is about accountability. As I said previously, I'm a world citizen. I mean, I was born and raised in Senegal, but quite early I moved to France and discovered Europe, and which make me an Afropean, if I can put it that way. And it's I think it's a funny notion, you know, Afropean. But I think, you know, go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I absolutely love that Afropean. I think it's the first time I've heard it, but I think it's just such an apt description because, yeah.
No, I mean, it's true. So, I mean, it's funny because I've heard it from a friend of mine, a really great friend of mine, and she put it to the point because, as you know, with many of us from the continent, which had the privilege, and I call it, we won the lottery ticket. We basically was born there and had the chance to, you know, to be put in a plane and come to Europe and enjoy the great education and then get to discover some values and, you know, be able to have a great education and went on, for my case, to go into the energy sectors. But yet we never had to forget about our heritage. Yet we never had to forget about what's going on in our continent and the development of the continent. Certainly through our parents and also through the family we've left behind, and always being close to the development and seeing what was happening. And as we grow and as we mature and as we also go our path through our industry and our own work, realize that it's all about development and it's all about how we also give back. And me personally working in the energy sector and coming to realize that any development cannot come without energy, and that energy is the baseline of, you know, economic development and enhancing human quality of life. You stop, think, and go back to where you come from, as we would say in one of Senegalese proverb, you know, if you don't know where you're going, go back where you're coming from, you know, then you make the jump to, well, I am in the energy sector. I deal with development every single day, yet I've left the continent 20 years ago, and that continent is in a fantastic move. How do I contribute? How do I pay back that continent that gave me that much? Mm. And the answer is so obvious. It's about accountability. It's about core energy. It's about doing that very one thing that enables us to be where we are and who we are. And it's about, you know, creating that company, which is basically, you know, and maybe for your audience, Kori will, you know, ring bell to some people's. Kori is a mussel, actually, a small mussel that you find in the sea. It used to be a currency in the old days in Africa, when Africa used to be a high trading nation, and the Kori shell was the baseline of the economic development. Now with Kori Energy, we try to do our bits, knowing that energy is the baseline and economic development. But we also know that, you know, there is no successful economy without strong local companies. That's why Kori Energy business model is centered around the local independent energy companies, providing communities with the sovereignty of economic and sustainable development. So that's what we are poised to do.
That sounds amazing. And I'd like to pick up on the whole concept of Kori Energy. And I was wondering if you could perhaps just talk a little bit about the business. I mean, what it is that you are doing, and the fact that your approach to providing mm-hmm. energy is perhaps a little bit different to that of other companies.
Yeah, it's true. You know, we've looked at the market really carefully, and it is true there are amazing companies. I mean, I won't quote them all because, you know, you would always forget someone doing fantastic work in the last 10 years trying to solve the gap, the tremendous gap that we are facing. You know, more than 500 million people in sub-Saharan Africa do not have access to energy today. And despite all the efforts, achieving universal access by 2030 will certainly fall short. And this is not lack of effort. Yet if you see all the business model that we have around us, they're all geared around energy access. And we have a nascent industry where people are bringing different solutions, where we see that our capabilities, our core value proposition is to recognize that to solve a problem, you need to make it profitable. And when we talk about profit, we talk about those who are on the front line to solving that problem, and the local energy companies, which are the best place to serve the last mile customers in sub-Saharan Africa. I think it was Tidjane Thiam that most of us know, a great African business leader. He says rightly, we've seen it, and history has demonstrated companies and also economies and countries do not develop if you do not have participation from the local companies. Mm. So for us in the 21st century, it's not about, you know, external companies like Kori based in Berlin or in Europe exporting, but solving the energy crisis or fighting climate change, that matter, is all about collaboration. So it's about a win-win situation where we work hand in hand with the local energy companies in sub-Saharan Africa, because they're the best place. They know the customers, they know the regulation, they know the country. And really importantly for us, energy is a service industry. To serve your customer, you need to know their customers. And we do believe that there is no one better place to know the sub-Saharan African customers than the people of sub-Saharan Africa. That's why our business model is centered around those independent energy companies, and energy is the baseline of infrastructures, and you would like to believe, or I continue to believe, that the baseline of any economic development need to remain in the hands of the companies in that given country. That's why our business model is centered around those companies.
I really like that. And I was actually going to ask this question a little bit later in our discussion, but I think perhaps this is an appropriate time to ask it. And as you mentioned, you were born in Senegal, you were educated in France, and you are currently based in Germany. So yeah. What I wanted to ask was, how are you using, I guess, the privilege of all of those different perspectives to benefit Africa's energy sector?
Oh, thank you for that. I think you say a really important word in that question is privilege. I think once you realize that you've been given privilege, the first thing that came to one's mind is, with privilege come responsibility and accountability. Mm. And that means that you need to pay back this privilege. As I said, I won a lottery ticket when I had the chance to come to Europe. And of course, when you are younger, you know, you just do what you like doing. You know, enjoy my time of being a curious little child and doing chemistry and energy or whatever I was doing. But the thing is, you know, having perspectives helps a lot when you want to solve problems. And I like solving problems, at least contributing with others to solve problems. I studied in France. I've worked a lot in Germany and all around the world. I had the chance to travel a lot. And meeting other people, opening my mind and learning a lot, helped me bring all that expertise and that knowledge in the continent. And it is not only bringing that knowledge, but also to share and to learn with the tremendous talent. And I think we should not underestimate the tremendous talent we have in sub-Saharan Africa. And I see that with the companies and the customers and also the technology partners that we are interacting day in and day out through our activities now in Koori Energy. I always hear about the skill gap, and I'm really uplifted in a bit to know that as we enter the 21st century, that Africa, sub-Saharan Africa in general, is really poised to be the continent of the futures, because we have more than 50% of the population is under 20, and all the energy, the talent, and the knowledge that we have in that continent is extremely important. But it is so important that we exchange. So the experience that I have personally, but others as well, and also the experience and the knowledge that they have. So this is very much a collaborative world, and it is a globalized world. It is not one, no one doesn't have the answer in their own. And we have this collaborative system in way in which we work as a core team. And that's what I bring on the table. So over 23 years of experience and knowledge and learning from different parts of the energy sectors and energy business. And it is a really challenging yet rewarding, I would say, industry. And I think that if we look at the challenge or the gap that we need to close, structuring it as an industry where every player have their rightful place and into that value stream to be able to maximize capability and then deliver energy access at scale is very much what I'm passionate about.
Thanks for sharing that. I really liked hearing your journey. I think it's really important for people to be able to understand where you come from, in some ways to understand where it is that you are going and why you've chosen that particular path. So that does bring me to a question about being a woman. And what is your take on the concept of a woman in, as it relates just basically to the role of women in business? I mean, do you think that it is a relevant point?
Oh, yeah. Well, Frankly, Claire, I must admit that if you would have asked me this question, say, 10 or 15 years back, I wouldn't have seen the point in a woman in, you know, business or whatever, you know. I was, you know, simply being myself. I would say, you know, enjoying, you know, doing what I like doing. However, you know, the overwhelming response that I've received from women and men as I started in my first step as a leader, 10 years back or 15 years back, actually made me realize that there was a serious elephant in the room. Women consistently outperform men in further education. And that's, you know, a known thing since decades and decades, you know. And then I just look back when I was at universities and I close my eyes and I see who was in the theater rooms, you know, with me, there was more women than men. Mm. And now when I reflect, well, wait a minute, where are they, all my, you know, my fellow women at the time? They're not here. I'm surrounded by men, and actually I'm the single woman in industry now. So therefore there is a problem. So when these women now lift their heads as they enter university, they don't see representation, because this is what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so notwithstanding all the progress that has been made with, you know, women's rights, minority rights, etc., this point has never ever been more relevant, you know, as we embark in the biggest challenge, and we need all the talents that we have, particularly women, as 50% of the communities or of the people in the world.
Mm.
So yes, I very much believe in the role of women in business, because we don't have equality yet, and we absolutely need to continue push for it, and we absolutely need to continue show the art of the possible to all young women and male out there, because this is a joint effort to show and level the playing field to everyone out there.
And if I could sort of take that kind of zoom in on that just a step further and ask then what you believe your role is as a woman leader in mm-hmm. the energy sector.
Yeah, I do believe that the role of any leader, and I'll come specifically to the role of a leader in a second, but the role of any leader is to enable people to simply be at their best. Because we cannot ask people to do more than their best, because it's already difficult to be at your best every single day, you know. And enabling people to be at their best is very much an interactive learning process, which is for me centered around active listening, constructive feedback, and most importantly, a process of trial, failures, and success. And I think as a leader, it's really important to foster an environment where people, you know, can be challenged, you know, to go beyond and above and discover who they are really, self-awareness, understand their strengths and weaknesses, but also have the ability to fail. Because if you are not able to fail, you won't understand success when you see it. You have to be able to put in an environment where you can learn and grow, and learning come from failing. And that's important that we nurture that. This is specifically important for young women, because we know that society, for whatever reason, has been boxing women into, you know, gender bias types, things, women are weak on this woman that. And yet we know it's all about attitude and it's about confidence, and enabling women to see that they have specific skill set which are inherently important and specific to them would help them actually be really successful in the energy sectors or in the so-called STEM jobs is really important. And I do believe that as women leaders, as women in position, it is a tremendous responsibility for us to show the art of the possible. How do we do that? We need to mentor and coach the young women and also the young male, because to solve the problem, we need people to understand that this is not a fight against, this is not about male going down for women to go up. This is to show to everyone that women have their place because women are capable. You know, science have demonstrated it, and women need now to just believe in themselves. It's all about the attitude, and whatever they set to their mind, they can achieve it. And it's all about, you know, showing them the art of the possible.
And if you were to share a message with young women out there who are wanting to get into, say, engineering or the power sector, what would your message to them be?
Well, simply go for it. Go for it, because you are made for this. If you step back and just look at what is engineering or delivering in the power sector for that matter, well, working with a diverse team to solve complex problems and delivering life-transforming results with a tiny budget, right? That's what engineering is about. I don't know any better definition of a woman. I don't know you, Claire, if you do, but me personally, for my, you know, 20 years of experience, you know, and my observation about women in life, that's how I would define women, right? You know,
so we're born engineers.
Exactly. You know, we're born engineers. You know, you just need to watch us, and you will say, yes, that's us. So do not be afraid. You know, if you don't aim for the stars, you won't reach the sky. So what I mean with that is all about attitude. You know, it's all about attitude. If you worry about the skill, is it worry about, can I do this? We can teach you capability, but we won't be able to teach attitude. So what I expect from young women is just to believe you can do it and to reach for that sky, because you will touch it. If you just set your mind to it, you can do it. That's really my message, is to go for it. The second thing is, we need you. You know, we are set for our biggest fight yet, for survival, as we are gearing up to solve climate change. We cannot do it without 50% of our talents, and that are the young women, which are already outperforming all the young male out there, yet we are not seeing them coming into the industry. And we know that there are skills which are solving the problem of the world are engineering. And we know that energy is, you know, the baseline of everything. So we need the young women to come and help us secure our futures for the planet and secure the future for the next generation. So I can't wait them to come and join us at Kori Energy, join us in all other energy companies in the power sector in sub-Saharan Africa and all over the world for that matter.
Thank you very much. I really like that. We are sort of gearing up for the biggest fight of our life, and you're right, we can't afford to have 50% of our brain power sort of not being part of that fight. If I could perhaps then change the focus just a little bit to be perhaps a little bit more on you as a person. And one of the things that, I mean, obviously women, and not to say that men don't have this, but women have multiple roles in their lives, including that of mother and housekeeper and cook and all of that kind of thing. So how do you manage the kind of work-life balance, and what do you do in your downtime?
The famous work-life balance question.
I know. If you could answer that, you would be rich, right?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I don't know work-life balance. What I mean with that is, I only know about life and the importance of life, right? I'm privileged enough, you know, to decide what I love, what I like doing, and to doing it. So I don't differentiate about, oh, I have a work and I have a life. I have a life and I live it fully. And that is really, really important. Now, what I do recognize is that I'm a human being with a finite energy level. So I very much pay attention to how I balance my energy level. And I also very much pay attention how the people around me that I care about, the people who work for me, the people I love in my families and friends, how do they balance their energy level? So that very idea that there is, you know, two distinct, you know, area of this is work and this is life and you need to balance the two, personally cannot relate to that. I really more relate to how do I make sure that I'm doing well and that the people around me are doing well. That is more relevant to me. Mm-hmm. So how do I do that? I think again is about recognizing my limit as a person and also finding what works for me. So I love sport, so I'm not good at it per se, but but I keep going. So I love running and, you know, and every time I can find some, I'm quite disciplined or trying to be disciplined of recharging my batteries with doing some exercise, but also during the day, you know, as I said, I'm privileged enough to do what I love, which is running Corey Energy with a fantastic team. So I spend a lot of time with those people in the office or in meetings. But during that time, I make sure that I find some time just to sit down and think, you know, sit down and what do I call that? My me time, even if it's in the office. Not only for myself, but this is so important to research that energy level, energy balance, because that energy gets depleted through the day that we build it on the onset for everyone at any Corey Energy, because what works for me doesn't necessarily work for the others. But what is important is to create an environment where every single individual knows that it is okay to have a different level of energy throughout the day. And it's important for everyone to recognize that as we work together in a diverse team. And also it is important that every individual themselves take the time, you know, to find out what works for them and make sure that they balance their energy level. Because as I said previously, it is important to enable people to be at their best. And we have to put into our working culture that environment that people know is okay to be at high energy, but there will be days as well where we will be at low energy, mm-hmm. and that is fine. There is nothing wrong with that. But we need to ensure people can balance it, can voice it. And if they are really at low energy, we have a system of support to help them go through the day while we still have to deliver for our customers, you know, and the same applies with family, with friend, and et cetera. That is what is more important for us. And we've embedded that in our working culture. We've embedded that in our processes, making sure that everything that we do is centered around the individual, is centered around people. Because as I say, we only have one life, right? We have to take care of it because otherwise it's too late.
Yeah. If I could ask then, who would you say is your inspiration?
Right, that's a really interesting question. You know, so this is one of those where as you go through, I could say to you, my mom, Nelson Mandela, Napoleon, because all those people inspire me. And then when I reflect back and I try and understand why, and to tell you exactly why they inspire me, all of them boil down to one thing. They are people who are dedicated to other people, who go beyond and did understand that actually what they do, the decision they made for whatever reason, you know, at their level, right? Mm-hmm. The decision they made was to do something bigger for than themselves. And I would summarize it by saying that what inspired me are the people, because if I boil it down to people have this ability when they face a situation to look deep inside themselves and realize that they have capabilities that they can draw out and draw down. So you will excuse my English here. You can see that I'm not a native speaker, but that ability to go beyond. And that's really what's inspired me. So I'm really much pull my energy, pull my inspiration from people to believe that people can realize and do big things when they set their mind into it. That's really what inspired me.
I love that. And I think that you have an incredible turn of phrase. So please don't try and speak English the way English speakers do, because you'll lose all the poetry that you bring to the language.
I think it's too late anyway.
if I may ask then, what book are you reading, or and what lessons are you taking from it, or what is your favorite book and why?
I like reading historical novels, right? So whether they're fact-based, most of the historical novels tend to be based in any fact, like things around Roman Empire or Ottoman Empire or the Tudors or Egyptian Empire or the Malian Empire or the Manza Mansur, etc. So what happened in the past, and I guess maybe it helped me understand the present, but I like it when it's fictional and the princess or whatever. So I like fictional novels because it's like time traveling for me. And that really I love to, so I can just, go deep in that and then forget about myself. But I guess in a more serious note, the book that has really shaped me, some people may know it or not, is the English title is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Yes.
I think the essence of the books boils down to the fact that the world is not fair. And even in the most difficult situation, one always have the ultimate control in one's hands. The choice on how to react to external event imposed upon oneself, which is this notion of ultimate freedom that no one that can take away from us. So that, when I read that book, it's really much made me think about, Nelson Mandela when he was in his jail cell, or other activists and other people, or the Gandhi when he was having his resistant movement, what they went through their mind saying, whatever is happening around me, it may be really difficult, it may be really challenging. I, at the end, can decide how I react to that. And I found that really profound to say, yes, it is difficult, but I still have this little hand of freedom that I can hang on and decide for myself. And even without taking it to those big figures, those big, I can see it every single day, particularly when it's come back to sub-Saharan Africa. I see it in my close family. I see it in people that are every single day relate to, that women in developing nation, in developing country, whether it's in sub-Saharan Africa, in Latin America, in Southeast Asia, are the one who hold the economy, with families, as you said, with informal economies, running the house, running the businesses, and et cetera, how difficult their life conditions are, but yet they keep going. And that make me think about all those people and all those women in particular. And that are, as I said, the people who inspire me, and that's what this book does for me every day.
Yeah, it really is an incredibly profound book. I've actually just recently reread it again. I think if you haven't read Man's Search for Meaning, definitely do so, because it will change the way that you look at the world. Viktor Frankl's perspective on things was incredibly profound. I do have to ask, just in terms of the historical novels, have you read any of the books by Sharon Penman?
No, is it anyone? Which one would you recommend? I'm already excited. I'm just taking notes now.
She wrote a series of books that basically starts at the beginning of the British invasion in 1066,
yeah,
and goes right up to the Tudors. And so she's written a number of books about Eleanor of Aquitaine and King Henry, and she wrote a whole series of books around the Yorkists and the Lancasters and the War of the Roses. My favorite one is The Sun in Splendor.
Sun in Splendor.
Yes. And
you know what I'm going to do straight after this?
Oh, I tell you what, if you like historical novels and princesses and beautiful love stories, but also all that political machination that goes on in the background, I think you'd like her books. They are incredible. And you learn so much about these amazing historical figures. I mean, Eleanor of Aquitaine, for instance, for me, is just one of the most incredible women ever to have lived. She was married to the King of France. She was married to the King of England. She was mother to Richard the Lionhearted. And she lived to be like 80 something in a time where, you know, if you lived to be 40, you were doing well.
You were lucky.
Exactly. And she was
pretty much a woman of power, right? And were talking for ages where you couldn't even breathe without a man telling you to breathe, right? So that's what is fascinating as well when you look at those women at the time, you know.
Exactly. I mean, she wrote her own story. And so I think you'll enjoy the books by Sharon Penman, because they touch on a lot of this kind of stuff.
Well, I look forward to it, and I will report back to you. So I'm
good.
Straight after this call, I will be on Amazon delivery tomorrow, arriving tomorrow. I like when they say arriving tomorrow, right?
I know that's the benefit of having Amazon and Amazon Prime, 24-hour delivery.
Exactly, yes.
So my last question, and that is really just, what is the message that you would like our listeners to take away from this discussion? And that is both the male and the female listeners of this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's Women in Energy podcast, you know, so I wish, obviously, as you just said, that it is women and men equally tuning in monthly to listen to it, because it really requires a joint effort to first level the playing field between men and women, because as I say, this will take all of us to deliver the staggering challenge facing us. But also for me, most importantly, for all the young women listening to us today, whatever they want to do, they can do it. There is no doubt about it. And I think if I just take myself as a single example, you know, they can see that, they can do that, you know, having been born in the smallest city somewhere in sub-Saharan Africa and sitting here today talking to you, if at all, that should show them that impossible doesn't exist, as the French would say. Mm. And if really they want to do something exciting, life transforming, and to contribute to something that really make an impact, they have to join engineering, they have to join the power sector, and we need them to secure our future. So really appealing to them to come and, you know, talk to us, join us, and then make something great.
Ndiaka, thank you so much. I have so enjoyed talking to you, and I look forward to seeing the work that Kari Energy is going to be doing. I look forward to seeing the successes that you are going to have on the continent, and really the transformation that you're going to be bringing to other people's lives. So thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Claire. And I was really delighted to have this opportunity talking to you, and thankful you and AC for the great work you guys are doing.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you for joining us on this Enlit Africa podcast. This episode is brought to you in partnership with ESI Africa. For more podcasts, you can visit the Enlit Africa website at enlit-africa.com or visit the ESI Africa website, esi-africa.com. Be sure to tune in again for more conversations and insights into the things that really matter to Africa's energy industry. Until next time, I'm Claire Falkvane, and you've been listening to the Women in Energy podcast.